there's one psychological reaction that we're all going to experience at some point in our lives, and that's grief when we lose a loved one. It's much misunderstood, often misdiagnosed as depression and treated as depression, and you're going to hear about that controversy in a minute. But also, in recent years, they've developed a diagnosis where grief becomes an actual disorder, and there's controversy over what works. Anyway, a clinical trial's been done into this, comparing two forms of psychotherapy, and one of the leaders of this research was Richard Bryant, Professor Richard Bryant, who's director of the Traumatic Stress Clinic in the School of Psychology at the University of New South Wales.
For decades and decades, most psychiatric diagnostic systems have resisted actually ever recognising grief as a psychiatric disorder because, as you say, it's universal. Whenever we lose a loved one, we experience grief. And so the medical systems have been very resistant to pathologising that.
But not only that, you had the Kubler-Ross phenomenon, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who talked about the stages of grief. There are probably no stages of grief. She accurately describes some of the emotional states that you get into in the thought processes, but they can happen simultaneously in any one day. And some people will tell you, well, I still go through some of that sometimes.
Well, that sort of highlights the issue that we all go through waves of grief. So somebody several years after losing somebody can suddenly have pangs of grief. Is that normal or is that abnormal? And what's happened over the last probably 20 years is we've accrued more and more evidence that tells us that there's a small proportion of people. It's about 7% of bereaved people a year beyond the loss of the loved one will actually still be stuck in that very, very strong emotional pain. Most of us don't actually get over grief, but what prolonged grief disorder refers to are people who become stuck in that phase of grief that we all have acutely, but it's like they never move past it.
And presumably, to get the name disorder, it's affecting the rest of their life. They're not able to get down to work or as well as they might, or relationships and that sort of thing.
That's right. So when ICD-11, which is the World Health Organization's diagnostic system, put out its latest edition in 2018, we worked on prolonged grief disorder and we looked at it across the world and we could see that this constellation of symptoms, which is at its very hub, very persistent yearning or longing for the deceased, and that's causing me so much emotional pain, I just cannot function. It's causing me a lot of distress and I just can't engage in new relationships and I just can't get on with meaningful activities. And this is a rather consistent pattern that we now see across cultures, East and West, across different types of relationships to the deceased when we've lost them and different types of death.
And sometimes it's mislabeled as depression and antidepressants are prescribed, which are not going to do any good and potentially could do some harm.
It is widely identified as depression and antidepressants are very commonly used. And why that's a problem is that trials have been done that do tell us that when you do a head-to-head comparison between a grief treatment and an antidepressant, the medications don't come out very well. So we really needed to identify people with grief as distinct from depression so clinicians could be directing them to the right treatment.
And there's this phenomenon of grief counselling, which I've often wondered, before we get to the clinical trial you did, which was not grief counselling, it was grief therapy, I've often wondered whether it reinforces the grief.
Well, the grief counselling industry is something that goes back decades and decades, back into the days of Kubler-Ross. What we know now from many trials, meta-analyses that have been done is that it's just not effective.
Does it make people worse?
Well, it can. I don't want to say all bereavement support groups and grief counselling are being toxic, but if somebody is actually having a persistent grief problem, it's not something that we would be recommending. What we do know in the acute phase is that most people will adapt with time, social support, family, etc. We need time to adapt.
This study you did was into two forms of grief psychotherapy, one which is cognitive behavioural therapy with a focus on grief itself, which you stated in the paper many people find difficult to follow, and the other one was mindfulness-based, so using mindfulness meditation or techniques, at least mindfulness techniques, associated with cognitive behavioural therapy. Just describe the two therapies before we talk about the trial.
Grief-focused cognitive behaviour therapy is the most common one that's used around the world. It's one that's been around for about 20 years now. It's very much focusing on memories of the deceased for a number of sessions with a therapist. And the reason we do that is we know that most people with prolonged grief, they really have not had a chance to talk about it and they really haven't confronted those memories and those emotions. We don't do it for long in therapy, so we keep it contained. But we know that it is a very effective treatment. We've done trials with and without that reliving, if you like, of the death memory. And when you don't do that, it's not as effective.
I just want to remind listeners that a few weeks ago we covered this with trauma-focused cognitive behavioural therapy, which does work as well, which to me sounded a bit like therapy that you would use for a phobia, not to diminish the sense of trauma or grief, but it's that the reaction to the trauma, or in this case, the grief, is one where you avoid it or you're frightened of it. And when you confront it and able to talk it through, you put it in a more realistic context. So it's a bit like a phobia as well, which is with a phobia, you don't run away from your fear of a particular situation, you actually run towards it, carefully guided by a therapist, and realize that the fear can be conquered.
It's a really good question you're asking there. In fact, the person who developed and did the first trials in this area actually borrowed the intervention from PTSD treatment. And the reason she did that was it was developed in the aftermath of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Now, that was actually a very traumatic form of grief. And so it made sense for them to use that form of what we call exposure therapy, which you're right, you'd apply that to all sorts of phobias. What we know now in grief, though, it is the mechanism is different from what we're doing in anxiety or PTSD. What we do in those disorders, we ask the person to focus on the trauma memory, do it repeatedly, do it for a long period of time, and do it session after session after session, because what we want to see is that distress reducing over time, because the person is learning, I don't need to fear that thing anymore. A different thing is happening in grief. We've done comparisons of PTSD with grief, and what we find is that the distress the person has when they're reliving the death memory doesn't follow the same pattern as PTSD. The distress doesn't necessarily subside, and it doesn't need to for the person to get benefit from the treatment. What it's doing is just allowing them to process the emotions a bit. It reduces the avoidance, and that really opens the gate, if you like, for us to do the other important work, which is considering how they're thinking towards the deceased, they're thinking about themselves, their future, and then planning for future events and developing, if you like, a different kind of relationship with the deceased, which is very much what we aim for.
And the comparative therapy was this mindfulness technique.
The mindfulness is not straight Eastern type yoga. It's a form of cognitive behavior therapy that's been blended with mindfulness over the years. And essentially what it does, it doesn't challenge people's thoughts, but what it does, it's teaching people to tolerate distress. And we took this approach because some people find the cognitive behavior therapy approach somewhat distressing to think about the memories. Mindfulness has been shown to be effective in treating depression and preventing relapse of depression because it's teaching people strategies of being still, of focusing on their body, on different thoughts, and being able to tolerate them. So we wanted to compare those two.
So you had a trial where you had 100 people with this grief disorder and they were randomized to either the mindfulness technique or the grief focused cognitive behavioral therapy. What did you find?
At the end of treatment, interestingly, there was no difference between the two conditions.
How many sessions over how long?
They see a clinical psychologist for 1 hour a week for 11 weeks. Then they get assessed, and then 6 months later, they were assessed again. After treatment, everybody was doing the same. There was a strong reduction of grief severity in everybody. But interestingly, at the 6 month follow up, the people in mindfulness, they had a significant relapse, whereas the people who received the cognitive behavior therapy, they continued to improve. Our thinking is that there is also data in the study to tell us this, that whereas both are providing symptom relief, really it's the cognitive behavior therapy treatment is probably addressing the mechanisms or the causes of why I'm still having prolonged grief. So being able to change how I'm thinking and being able to reduce my avoidance and address the memories and understanding that I don't need to fear that distress so much, that's changing some of the causes of why I'm stuck in my grief. And that allows me then to have longer-term gains that wasn't enjoyed by people who did the mindfulness.
And some forms of cognitive behavioral therapy require top-ups, or some people require top-ups, you know, one or two sessions, maybe a year later. I know that wasn't part of the trial, but is that the case with grief-focused cognitive behavioral therapy?
Well, that's an interesting point. It's something that we tend not to do in most of our trials, which is a pity because we tend to see relapse.
So if somebody's listening to this who thinks when they heard your description of grief disorder, that fits with them and it's affecting their life and they need help, are clinical psychologists trained in this grief focus? How does a GP that you go to get the referral know whether a psychologist is trained in this grief focus or cognitive behavioral therapy?
The number of clinical psychologists trained in this is a lot less than those who are familiar with PTSD treatment or anxiety treatment. But I would be asking somebody for cognitive behavior therapy to deal with the grief. If listeners are interested, they can also Google the traumaticstressclinic.com, where we do run free programs for people across Australia.
Richard, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Professor Richard Bryant, who is in the School of Psychology at the University of New South Wales.